it's a lot easier to plan for things when you're going out because honestly, there's more lounge time. You know, it's like easier to make those decisions because, you know, we kind of are looking forward to some of these layovers and things on the way out. And then on the way back, you know, it's like, unfortunately, lounge on arrival is kind of a lost thing, right? There's very few locations in the world that have arrivals lounge, either access or actual dedicated arrivals lounges. It's like Heathrow, maybe like a couple places in the Middle East, Hong Kong. It's so...
Zurich.
Okay. Yeah, but it's such a minimal number of places where you have that pre-security arrivals lounge experience.
Welcome to Travel Stories. We're your hosts, Tom Kim and Trevor Mountcastle. This week, we are talking about No Way Home. Tom, we've been looking at so many different itineraries for individual trips as well as for a guy's trip. And the one thing that I think we've both come to the conclusion of is it's just so hard to get home.
It is. It's surprising. Like, I think we're realizing this after a long time of this being true for us because I feel like this has been kind of an unspoken rule where we're always seeming to have a lot more difficulty figuring out how we're getting home than how we get there. This seems to be the plain truth for a lot of trips we've been planning, not only recently, but I think in the past too.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about it, right, even that birthday trip that we did last October, we got on the plane. We got on the plane without a way home. We flew down to Bogota, and we knew we were going to Madrid, but we didn't know where we were going from there.
Absolutely.
I think this is a growing and growing trend, and I don't think it's because we're picky. Are we picky? Yes. We're looking for particular experiences.
We're both pretty particular about certain things. I think we tend to veto certain things, like, no way.
Okay, fair. That's a fair point. Okay.
Yes. And I think sometimes it works out in our favor, right? I mean, like you referenced that birthday trip. I mean, obviously, one of the highlights of that trip was being able to come home in Lufthansa first class.
Yeah, no, it worked out well. Don't get me wrong. It worked out beautifully. We were monitoring that Lufthansa space. We just happened to run into JT and Katie Genter. It worked out as well as we could possibly have hoped, even better than we could have, you know, than we probably did hope. But it still comes down to that uncertainty and that partial trip syndrome, I'll say, that I feel like we have had, both of us have had this year. I mean, just look at some of the examples we have. I've got a September cruise with the family.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I've got a July cruise with my family.
Yeah. Cruises in Europe. I've got a way out. In fact, you'll be excited about this. I haven't told you this, but we're actually going to fly on Delta One from JFK to Madrid. So we'll be able to go to the Delta One lounge.
That's exciting.
We just have to wait until September. But you've got your June trip. That's overseas, right? Is that a European cruise or no?
That's actually my July trip, I think. We have a June trip.
We have a June trip. Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Let's pivot to that for a second. We're going to be up in Canada.
Yep.
And we're trying to figure out where we go from there.
Yep. It's quite the predicament, eh?
Hey, I like how you make it appropriate or applicable to our friends to the north, right?
That's right.
So for that one, for example, we've been going back and forth. Do we go to Europe? Do we go to South America? Do we go to Australia? Do we go to Asia? I think in this case, because we've got about 5 days to work with, 5-6 days to work with for that trip.
Including a federal holiday.
Exactly. Yeah. The world is our oyster.
I think there's a bit of analysis paralysis. I think there's so many different options on the way back. And yet, you know, there's some specific parameters around date, right? And maybe that's part of it is, you know, part of the coming back home, you know, there is a tendency where I guess a lot of people like to come back on a weekend or come on a Saturday, Sunday. So it kind of limits the date that your date range, right? So that seems to be one limiting factor that seems to be why it seems always harder to find your way back home than it is maybe the way out. Because on your way out, you may be a little bit more flexible.
Yeah, because I think you want to get the most out of that trip or you want to get back and have a rest day. I like to do the rest day. I like to come back on a Saturday and that way I sort of adapt I kind of shrug off the jet lag. I get myself prepared for the week, prepared for going back to work and everything. But there are others that want to get as much of that trip as they can. They're the ones that are flying. You know, if you're flying home from Europe, you're flying on that 4 p.m. flight out of Munich on Lufthansa because you get almost a full day. You get the morning, you get the afternoon in Europe by flying on that's probably one of the latest flights out other than flying out of London.
Yeah, I mean, I think I definitely have my preferences, but, you know, honestly, what trumps that is the award availability. So if we are doing, you know, an award ticket, oftentimes, you know, I'm picking the best options out of what's available. And sometimes it is slim pickings. You know, if you're coming back from Europe in the summer, you know, if you're coming anywhere from Asia lately, you know, it doesn't matter what time of the year it is. It seems to be a little bit tougher to find a good way to come back if it's not, unless it's on Air India or Ethiopian, right?
Yeah. Ethiopian is the one that I definitely see a lot of. Air India as well, although I have one filter on my seats.aero that never turns off. And that filter is to exclude Air India. Even from friends that have flown Air India. In fact, a colleague just recently flew Air India, I think a month or two ago. And she was like, yeah, I'm never doing that again.
You know, I really would love to fly Air India one day once they got their act together. I mean, you see promising signs, you know, I mean, with what is it, the takeover by, is it Tata, the Indian conglomerate that took over Air India?
I think so. That sounds familiar. Yeah. I remember listening on the air show that the Air India team had wanted to fly Brian Summers out.
Oh, wow.
And they specifically said that they were going to fly him in first on their newest aircraft. And he actually pushed back. He's like, but that's not representative of the product that you fly.
Right.
And I definitely have to give him kudos for that. But there is a turnaround in progress. And
Correct.
It's just a question of how soon they'll get there.
Yeah. I mean, I could see wanting to include Air India into my rotation of airlines that I'd be okay flying, but they may still be a ways off. But there are some interesting products. I mean, again, like they have some of those ex Aeroflot Airbuses out there. Didn't they receive some of those? Or they had some ex Delta 777s as well. They have some interesting aircraft in their fleet that probably wouldn't be that bad to fly.
Yeah. I'm going to have to defer to you. I haven't looked at too much of their fleet. I've tracked the turnaround to an extent, but I didn't realize it makes total sense that they would have had some Aeroflot birds. You know, Airbus had to find a home for them.
Yeah. So, you know, never say never, right, with some of this stuff. But again, yeah, I think a lot of times when you're doing your award searches and you're looking at, you know, what's available, you know, right now there's some like, yeah, you know, I've already done one connection in Addis Ababa in the last 2 years. I probably don't need to do that again anytime soon, unless it happens to be in the African continent.
Yeah, I haven't done Ethiopian yet, although it was funny. I was looking at Ethiopian for, I think it might have been like something like Copenhagen to Milan or Zurich to Milan. There was some Fifth Freedom flight on Ethiopian that I was very surprised to see.
Yeah, they have some weird Fifth Freedom flights in Europe, don't they?
They do. And I could definitely see doing that. There are some interesting Fifth Freedom flights, period. I think it's Oman Air or Gulf Air flew from Nice to Milan that we did fly on a narrow body, no less. There are some real interesting Fifth Freedom flights. I almost feel like one day I want to like just kind of like catalog them and then just start checking them off. Like I think Singapore does one from, I think it's probably Barcelona to Milan. And we're saying without confidence, because this is a tangent we did not plan for.
We did not plan for. No. Yeah, no, the Fifth Freedoms are just really interesting, you know, just interesting, you know, routes that, yeah, we should definitely do an episode about those. I know we personally have done a couple of those Fifth Freedom flights, and they're just fun ones too, because you just have weird, you know, you're not expecting a European airline to be flying between two cities in Asia or, you know, an African airline to be flying between two cities in Europe. But there you go. I always feel like Argentina is one of those that seems to be, you know, Buenos Aires seems to have a lot of those Fifth Freedom flights down there in South America.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Emirates flying from Rio down to Azazia, EZE, Buenos Aires, Argentina. You've got a lot of the GRU, Sao Paulo to Argentina, I think Swiss. There's a handful of others. And just for our listeners that might not know this parlance offhand, a Fifth Freedom flight refers to the freedoms of the air. And so there's, I think, 7 or 8 freedoms. And I think the evens are cargo related and the odds are passenger related. Am I going off?
First time I'm hearing that, but yeah.
So in Fifth Freedom, we'll have to double check that and we'll do a Fifth Freedom episode. I think we've pretty much demonstrated that it's a topic we both have great interest in.
coming soon, fifth Freedom episode. I'm sure it'll, if we haven't bored you already, we're going to do a whole nother hour on it.
Yeah. But just to explain the fifth Freedom is the ability to pick up passengers in a third country or a second country, we'll say, and then take them to a third country, not your own. First Freedom is the ability to start like in the US and go to Spain. And then I don't know what third is off the top of my head.
One of those is the weird one, right? It's like Qantas, you know, picking up passengers in LA and flying them to New York on what is really a domestic leg, but they're not allowed to market or sell it to people who they haven't actually flown from Australia.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. There's some weird things.
Is that like a fourth Freedom or a sixth Freedom? I don't know. It's one of those.
So we'll kind of parking lot this one or tarmac this one and we'll actually do our research.
It's in a holding pattern.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll put it in the racetrack holding pattern and do proper research. I think that's a fun one.
Yep.
Sometimes these conversations sort of just go down that path and it's kind of exciting.
I think people have noticed, you know, if they've listened to any of our episodes, they're probably like, oh, there's TK again. He's going on a tangent.
Or Trevor. Yeah.
Or Trevor. Actually, yeah, you're guilty too.
Oh, I'm a capital offender.
Yes.
So back to this June trip that we've been talking about. Yeah, the world is our oyster, but it's really not when you think about it, right? So South America is almost unattainable at this time. I mean, you used to see Santiago flights and you don't even see Santiago flights nowadays. Just what I've been searching, and I've been searching a fair bit, your only option is Copa. And I think we sort of, you know, said on a previous podcast, yeah, we're open to doing one way in Copa. I just don't think either of us could take round trip in Copa.
Yeah, strangely enough, I guess there's a lot of Star Alliance on my list of people that airlines I don't feel really too strongly about, whether it be Avianca, Copa, Ethiopian, or Air India. My God, I'm just realizing, boy, I'm being very anti-Star Alliance right now.
Yeah. Well, and I think I'm a little bit more on the One World side. I don't know why, but I've been trying to avoid British Airways. I think it's just more the London aspect.
And the YQ. I mean, let's face it. It's the YQ is the fuel surcharges that, you know, British charges on pretty much anything. Even I would think some economy tickets they're fairly large fees. But especially in business and first, right? I mean, we're talking about $800, you know, $1,500, you know, fuel surcharges, right, on award redemptions on British Airways. I mean, that'd leave a sour taste in your mouth.
That definitely. And then of course, the podcast's favorite One World airline, LATAM.
First of all, Mr. Mountcastle, may I correct you, please? LATAM is no longer in the One World. I think someone is a little bit behind on their alliances.
Wait, when did they leave? are they Delta? You're right. They are Delta. They are SkyTeam.
Delta has an equity stake in the airline, and they left One World several years ago, and they are not a SkyTeam member, but they are very, very highly integrated with Delta and SkyTeam.
See, now, if I had an ego, I would go ahead and try to edit this out, but I think it's more entertaining to keep it in. I don't know how I...
Well, you know, even us know-it-alls, you know, forget stuff now and again, or maybe never knew it to begin with. So the miles and points world has a lot to know, including the wonderful drama of like airlines leaving alliances and moving to others.
It's funny because I just remember LATAM as being the airline that I credit to Alaska. And so in my head, I was just thinking.
And they're still an Alaska partner. Yeah.
Yeah. But I just, in my head, I just made the jump from, okay, Alaska's One World, so LATAM must be One World. But you're right. They're SkyTeam. And, you know, there's been some moving chess pieces when you think about it because.
Oh, absolutely.
SAS, you know, we talked about that with Chris on the pod. They moved from Star Alliance to SkyTeam. I mean, SkyTeam's getting some good area.
They lost ITA. They're no longer SkyTeam. Now they're officially part of Star Alliance, if I'm not mistaken.
Are they officially? I knew they got bought by Lufthansa. I didn't know if there was like an official bringing in.
Or maybe they're not. Maybe that's my mistake for this episode. But as far as I know, that is the plan. And they did join the Lufthansa group, right? Which, mind you, is turning into quite the juggernaut. I mean, how many different contiguous European states are they going to be part of the airline alliance there between... What is it? Switzerland touches Germany, touches Austria, touches Italy, touches... Well, I guess Belgium isn't quite contiguous, is it?
No, I don't...
Does Belgium touch Germany? Boy, like we need a producer right here. You know, we have all this checking that we need to do.
You know, Belgium does touch Germany.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
Yeah.
So Think of all the contiguous European countries that have flag carriers in the Lufthansa group. It's kind of ridiculous.
Trying to think, where is Air Baltic out of? Oh, don't forget me and LOT Polish Airways. Oh, but LOT isn't.
LOT isn't part of the, right? No, that's not part of the Lufthansa group.
But Air Baltic
Star Alliance. Air Baltic, I think that's recent, right? Didn't they just do something with Air, or maybe there's a, maybe Air Baltic has an equity stake, but they're not part of the group yet? I don't know. Okay, now we've really gone down the rabbit hole.
So they have a wet lease. They have a 10% share in Air Baltic as of January.
They have an equity stake in Air Baltic. Yeah. I don't think they're owned by the group yet, but that's not the case with all these other ones.
Interestingly enough, Virgin Atlantic still shows ITA Airways as a partner.
Oh, okay.
They also align them with SkyTeam, so there might be a little bit of a delay. But actually, yeah. I do wonder whether or not ITA has made that transition yet.
I mean, it feels like, you know, a lot of times with these airlines that change alliances and things, they sometimes keep their other non-alliance partnerships open for quite some time. And I think that's maybe, but that's a holdup with LATAM because, you know, LATAM, I'm sure, does a lot of code sharing with a number of different carriers in South America.
Well, I mean, you have to, like, I mean, you know, alliances matter, but regionally you have to have partnerships.
Yes.
So doing some on-the-fly producing here, ITA Airways, as of February of this year, 2025, has exited SkyTeam and will join Star Alliance in 2026.
I got it. Okay, so we still got a little bit of time, but for all intents and purposes, I'm gonna start thinking of them as a Star Alliance partner, just because.
I agree with you. I need to fly ITA now that it's part of Lufthansa Group. They're breaking my lock on having flown all of Lufthansa Group.
Yeah, I'm nowhere near close. Well, how much have you flown Eurowings and Edelweiss and some of these other ones?
Oh.
I think you got a lot more than you think to, what is it, finish off your bingo card there.
Yeah.
And this is interesting because, you know, I'm actually kind of a fan of LATAM, and this gentleman is not. And he is, however, a huge fan somehow of ITA. He really, really, really wants to fly ITA. And I'm just like, what? Why? I just don't get it.
They have a nonstop from Rome to Dulles, Washington, Dulles.
All right, fine. That's true. Okay, fine. As a Europe nonstop from my home airport, okay. That's easy. But, you know, we were looking at them for, like, you know, Boston, Rome. We were looking at them for all lots of other routes other than the nonstop, which I hardly ever see that nonstop available as an award ticket. Like, that's apparently one of the ones that's a tough gig, or right? Tough redemption.
I've seen it once or twice booked through Virgin, and the date just didn't make sense. But it was, I think it was like, you think of Virgin now as like, you know, 29,000 is a good business class redemption. And it was like 60,000 one way. And I was just like, whoa. But when you think about other miles and points currencies, 60,000 isn't, it doesn't sound that bad.
It doesn't at all. Although, you know, again, I think we've also had this discussion several times now on multiple podcast episodes about how, you know, I don't know if it's necessarily mind taking something other than, what is it, business across the Atlantic, you know, just because of the you know, the stage links and stuff, you know, and some of the daytime flights. I'm like, I don't feel like I get the same value. I mean, unlike Asia, Middle East, South America, most of those other ones, I'm like, yeah, those are like 10-hour plus flights. I can kind of justify it. It's this kind of sub 8-hour kind of flights. And I'm like, do I really need to spend this currency?
We can't have this conversation again, because after the last conversation, after the episode with Traeger, I was looking at points.yeah for my September flight home. Again, the reason that we're having this conversation, in fact, is the no way home. And I actually almost booked Iberia Airways, or is it Airways, or just call it Iberia.
Let's call it Iberia.
22,500 Avios miles from Barcelona, Madrid, nonstop into Dulles. In economy. I almost booked that last conversation. So we can't do this.
Wow. I may be converting somebody. This is crazy. Well, and you were outnumbered on that last episode, right? Because I think Traeger and I both kind of come to that conclusion that it's possible to fly non-premium over the Atlantic.
Yes. Yes. I was outnumbered there. And if we have many more of these conversations, I might make a big mistake and actually book an economy flight, you know, over the Atlantic.
And then you'll be like, damn that TK. Why did I listen to him? Well, you know, we should probably actually go back to the theme of our actual episode here, which is why is it so hard to book our way home? And we basically did a huge tangent to say, yeah, some of it's because analysis paralysis and there are too many options, right? But there's a lot of other reasons too, isn't there?
There are. So bringing us back to this June trip, we've sort of set aside some of that analysis paralysis, and I think we've targeted, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we've targeted as one of our top three, Osaka, Japan, because of the World's Fair.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everybody that looks at award space knows that getting to Japan is almost unobtainium, maybe not as hard as...
It's turning into a unicorn destination, really is.
It really, really is. I mean, it's not as hard as South America, but it's pretty hard. And so what we found just through looking, Alaska is the way, but the way to Asia passes through Europe.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
That's a hard sell when you think about it, because you're going through Europe both ways.
Yep.
And maybe the way that I think about no way home, part of me wants to put blinders on for the way home. Part of me wants to get that overwater flight as close to home as possible. I don't want to fly from Japan to LA and then have to fly 5 hours in domestic.
Oh, that is the worst. Yeah.
And so I do put a little bit of blinders on because I'm picky. And I think I have the right to be picky. I think we all have the right to be picky, but I think that sort of filters a lot of the art of the possible. If you're trying to have a more streamlined approach. Now, don't get me wrong. I will probably take the Via Europe round trip to be able to do the World's Fair. And if any of our listeners have been to the World's Fair in Osaka or have interest, you know, definitely I hope you'll comment, either tweet or in the Slack channel, or even you can comment on the Milanomics website. We'd love to have your insight, because if we go, we'll only have like a day or two because we're spending a day each way to connect in Europe. But I think it really comes down to, on your way home, you want that experience. You really want that enjoyment to continue. That's why I prefer not to fly economy over the Atlantic, because I feel like the flight home is an extension of the vacation. And to be able to sit, have a nice glass of wine or bubbles, a nice meal, and watch a movie on the flight home feels like that extension of the vacation.
It's the finale. It's the finale of the vacation. And who wants, you know, the last act of the play to be the worst one, right? So it makes perfect sense. But I want to chime in and say, you know, part of, I think, why it's so hard for us to find these trips home, you know what it is it's our own experience, and that we've kind of been in the miles and points game for a while. And I think what part of it is that our behavior has been rewarded in the past. So there's always the option of, you know, there's always something better that's going to pop up at the last minute. And we have the change fees to prove it. You know, again, I feel like there's a line item for change fees in these airlines, you know, bottom line. And it's like, boy, who is this Trevor Mountcastle? We've been getting a lot of revenue from him. Anyway, and having tried to plan trips with this person who happens to share this podcast, I tell you, my credit card has sees a lot more change fees when I travel with this man than when I do it a solo, because
there's always something better.
There's always something better. And I think that is another, I think, key factor. Key factor is we have some behavior that's been rewarded in the past. And I think what that does is that totally changes your mindset, so that you're like, well, I could do this, but do I really want to lock this in? Because I know there's something better coming. And unfortunately, you know, we've scrapped entire, you know, multi-continent trips because something else has come up. I mean, to say that has happened not once, not twice, not thrice, you know, it's happened a lot. And I would say that's a pretty big factor in this.
It is indeed a regular occurrence. It is. And the thing is, I am not normally a procrastinator, but when it comes to booking flights, I just have that procrastination bug, that paralysis of, am I settling? And there are just times, I mean, on this May trip that we're doing, we're going back to Spain, excited to do it. Whole family is very excited.
Mr. Europe is back in Spain.
Yeah. We're talking to Traeger and going to go back to the Thompson. He has been gracious enough to book us there. So we'll be able to see how much of a VIP Traeger or reputation Michael has, which I'm sure is a wonderful reputation based on everything we've talked about.
Hey, they showed him the penthouse suite, so I mean, can't be that bad, right?
Hopefully they show us the penthouse suite, but I'm not gonna hold my hopes up.
Whoa, standards have been set high. Basically, you're telling me if you don't have a multi-level suite, you're gonna be disappointed.
I did not say that.
He didn't say it, but he was thinking it.
A guy can dream. A guy can dream. You know, if we don't dream, then we have nothing to aspire to.
I guess not.
And we'll be doing Valencia, but I wanted to lock this in because we needed something to plan for as a family. We haven't been overseas since January, which is a long period for us, unless you consider the cruise, but I don't really consider that. I mean, yes, we sailed overseas, but you know, the Bahamas not really overseas in my opinion. And so we needed something.
Way to throw shade on a total foreign country, but okay. I think the Bahamians are going to start out. Let me add this guy to a list here. Do not accept. Okay, sorry. Go right ahead.
Oh, we love the Bahamas, but we never have to like actually get a passport stamp. So in my head, it doesn't count. Wonderful country. But we ended up having to do, on this trip, we're going to have to do a double connect. So we've got to do a repositioning flight on the way out and on the way back. And then we've got to do a positioning flight for the way home. But we did that intentionally because we wanted to lock it in. We wanted to know that we had a trip to plan for, to look forward to. And sometimes I think that helps, but it also requires you to make sacrifices. Booking on JetBlue, booking on Singapore, both of them will incur hefty change fees. We're not talking about, you know, an Alaska partner award cancellation fee here. We're talking about multi-hundreds of dollars. And so I think that's, ironically enough, a trip that I'm not going to cancel. But that's also the only trip I think I have right now that is complete and has been complete, which is just a very odd thing when you think about all the different trips that we've got booked. We even had, until very recently, we even had a domestic flight down to New Orleans that we couldn't figure out the way home for.
Yeah, I was actually thinking like, you know, and you know, what the interesting thing about that is, you know, we were looking at it and I was looking at Google Flights, right? And, you know, I don't know if you guys ever looked at Google Flights and see that part that says, you know, hey, this flight is expensive or this flight is cheap or this flight is average. And it also says, oh, the best time to book this flight is May. And that's what it said, right? It said, and we were looking at this originally back in April thinking, oh, should we book it now? Should we book it now? And Google said, well, you know, our AI says the best price will be in May. And doggone it, I think they were right, you know, because I think the prices, like just as it flipped over to May, we saw prices change, we saw award availability change. So there's a little bit to some of that AI that Google Flights built into their software.
Definitely an unsung hero that I don't think we've ever talked about that on the podcast in the past. And you know, those little things, those little tweaks. I mean, Google Flights might have killed ITA Matrix. And for that, I will never, never truly celebrate them because I really miss ITA. But they've definitely did some enhancements. They've implemented some nice things in that Google Flights interface and how they provide that information.
Another thing, I just wanted to stop for a second and kind of point something out. You know, you were just talking about doing your double connects on your trip in May. And I think another thing that kind of is the reason why you and I have this no way home problem is we are much more likely to go bend ourselves backwards for the experience that we want.
Yes.
You know, including the fact that, you know, we're talking about a trip to Asia for one day, you know, that we're going to be in transit more than the time we'll be on the ground. And for us, obviously, a lot of it is, you know, the journey is the experience and we want to fly certain things and we want to fly in certain classes of services on certain airlines, you know, on certain types of equipment and you know, aircraft. And as a result, you know, because we're so picky, but at the same, it's funny, we're both picky and super flexible at the same time, you know, where we're kind of a dichotomy there, because I think that also contributes to this no way home problem, because part of our analysis paralysis is we're willing to do things that other normal people would not, which includes connecting in JFK to go back to our previous episode, you know, and doing other kinds of crazy positioning. And sometimes we have to catch ourselves, right? Because we're constantly having to say, hey, are we really forcing this like way too hard? And we find ourselves, you know, maybe we didn't check ourselves quite as much in the past, but I think as we're aging a little bit and being a little bit more judicious with, you know, maybe our time and our willingness to go to the ends of the earth, sometimes we're like, yeah, we're really forcing this one. Maybe we won't do that.
You're right. I suppose with age comes wisdom, and sometimes restraint is the part, a better part of valor.
Or idiosyncrasy. You know, I think that's the other problem with age.
Are you saying we're more eccentric?
Yes, I think that's completely fair.
I don't know how to come back to that one.
I don't know. Well, can you really argue with the truth? I don't think you can.
I don't know. No. I can't. Okay. We got to pivot. So if you can't find the way home, what's an alternative, right? If you can't piece together a full trip that's flying, you had the idea of pivoting a completely different way. You know, throwing out the old rule book and making a new playbook. Throwing out the old playbook and new playbook.
You know, I think this is, again, you know, we talked a little bit about our various cruises that we're planning this summer. I think cruising is one of the ways to pivot. It's definitely a way I've pivoted a lot of my travel. I think it does change the dynamics. And actually, it kind of contributes to this no way home problem. Because I find, especially with cruises, you know, I generally want to avoid flying in the same day as a cruise is departing. I think that's just a good rule to live by. I think airline travel these days is way too unpredictable that, you know, cruising is absolutely one where it's not, even with airline travel, you know, there's probably multiple routes or ways to get someplace. Cruising, you've got one time that that boat is leaving. And if you're not on that boat, it is a world of hurt to try to get onto it. And if it's a week-long cruise or even a short cruise, that could be very, very destructive, detrimental, you know, catastrophic. If I were to say, if you don't make a cruise. So I think that's one reason why I'm getting there. I tend to be a little bit more flexible because I'm there one day early or 2 days early or 3 days early. I'll just make a trip of the place that I happen to be, you know, leaving from, and that's fine. And so I think that's why a lot of times getting there, because I know I need to be there at a particular time and there's absolutely no leeway. That is one of the reasons why planning a trip to the cruise or positioning to a cruise is another reason why no way home is in fact exactly the situation I find myself in with my summer July cruise.
The leaving early, the getting there early is such a key point. I mean, even when you did try to arrive the day before on our last cruise, you almost were in extremis.
Yes. I was almost thwarted on my last cruise. Yes.
So tell us about your challenge on this July cruise of no way home.
Part of it is it shouldn't be that hard. I mean, I am taking a cruise from Rotterdam to Iceland one way. So basically, I'm disembarking in Reykjavik. And that actually shouldn't be that hard. It's just my problem is it seems like the only option that I have that's pretty reasonable from a dollar perspective is Play Airlines, which is a low-cost carrier based in Reykjavik. And that's probably who I'm going to fly. But I just, for whatever reasons, I'm kind of holding out hope. It's funny because, you know, you can do Alaska redemptions, you can do JetBlue redemptions on Iceland Air. And no matter how I cut it, they're all in like the 40 or 50,000 kind of range for that kind of short flight between Iceland and DC or Baltimore. And it's strange how most of those fares are in that kind of like $500 to $600 range. So you're like, the award redemption is actually pretty poor. To spend 40, 50,000 miles plus the immigration and YQ fees, you know, which are another $150, $200. And you're like, wow, this is like not a deal at all to do an award redemption. And yet at the same time, I'm not super excited to spend money on like this, you know, Icelandic low-cost carrier. Plus, the flight times are pretty late in the afternoon. So it'll be a pretty long day in Reykjavik Airport, I'm guessing, which may not be the most fun thing to do.
Yeah, that's a small airport. We didn't enjoy spending like the hour or 2 hours that we spent there. And the problem is that's only a 5 hour flight. No product is good. If you want a quality product, you're almost better off flying back to Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's your only option, really. I mean, there used to be days when I think when my wife and I went there, we paid like 500 and something and flew economy there on Iceland Air. We actually got to fly on the Aurora Borealis. Pencil 757. And that is that's about the range of that flight. I still remember going back to use the lav, and I guess it was the starboard side lav was shut down because the tank was full. I mean, you're pretty much you're flying on this aircraft about as long as you really want to be on this 757, and the lavs really showed it and everything else showed it. I got a sandwich shop right behind the Radisson Blue if you end up going into town in Reykjavik, by the way.
Ah, well, we might have to. I mean, it's going to be a pretty long, I mean, I think it's like a 3 p.m. or 4 p.m. type flight. And yeah, I'm pretty sure the cruise probably docks first thing in the morning. So unless we find some sort of day trip or some other excursion we can do during the daytime, you know, we may not be, I don't know exactly what we're doing. The other problem is like, I'm a little bit less flexible, I think, because trying to find a hotel room in Reykjavik in the summertime in July, is not the easiest thing, especially for when you're a party of three adults. You know, it's number one, you probably are getting two rooms anyway. And then on top of that, it seems like some of those rates are extortionate.
Yeah. I just remember Iceland as being really, really expensive, like more expensive than Europe in general. Although I tend to think probably more Norwegian pricing, because Norway was pretty expensive as well when we were there a couple of years ago. It definitely an expensive country. Beautiful country, though. I mean, they've got the black sand beaches. They've got Gullfoss Falls. They've got the geyser. I mean, there's a lot of gorgeous natural beauty there. And then the springs.
Yeah, I'm excited for this cruise. It's going to, I think it has at least three stops in Iceland. So we're going to be, I think, cruising the Iceland coast for at least a little bit of the time. And I actually need to look into some of the excursions and stuff, because it definitely will be nice to see Iceland, especially outside of Reykjavik, because I know that that's kind of the tourist hotspot, but it's also probably a little over-toured or over-visited. I don't forget what the exact term is, but
over-enjoyed.
They probably have too, yeah, it's too many tourists probably.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, if you do have just a long layover or a long time there, you could always just stop at the Blue Lagoon and hang out there for a little bit before going to the airport.
I think we may have a nicer Blue Lagoon type of experience or excursions as planned, because I think there's some of the other stops in these slightly less touristy places have options that might be more fun and hopefully a little bit nicer, you know, because it's going to be a little bit more, you know, a little bit more exclusive, a little bit less crazy.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, we didn't go to the Blue Lagoon when we were there. We were there in the dead of winter over Valentine's Day one year. Didn't get to see the Northern Lights either, which was a real big shame, because we even went out, froze our butts off on a cruise
to
try to get off the coast to you know, away from the light pollution and everything. Heard all about Norse mythology, but got no Aurora Borealis.
Yep, I'm excited. My first time in Iceland, haven't been there before. And this is actually one of the cruises that I got for matching to win Platinum last year. So this was one of the benefits of doing that match and actually ended up doing 2 stays at the Wynn Hotel so that I could qualify for this.
Very cool. Yeah, that was your 5-star famine Las Vegas experience, right?
It was. Oh, well, you know, it was a little bit, but not too much, because, you know, we also, I did actually, I don't know if I could call it a 5-star famine if it included a, you know, a Christmas Day buffet, you know, at the Wynn, which was delicious, by the way. I highly recommend the Wynn buffet. It's a great place.
Well, 5-star famine isn't you don't eat. It's it's just an extra zero on your bill.
Well, it's more like I consider, you know, and first of all, I feel like I'm going to own the 5-star famine moniker a little, because I feel like before I said it, I don't hear too many people saying that particular term. But that all originated, what, from my Maldives trip, right? Where I was bringing crackers and beef jerky and, you know, splitting a hamburger with my travel companions because the prices were so expensive. And that's why I call it 5-star famine. But you're right, because, you know, then you go to the buffet breakfast or whatever that's provided to you and you order everything because you're loading up. So I guess you're right. Maybe that is spot on for 5-star famine. So.
Wow, we're covering a lot of distance. We're covering a lot of space this one.
We are circling the globe.
So let's try to close it out with one oddity that I've been observing. So I subscribe, and I think I've said this on prior episodes. So I subscribe to Spencer's Straight to the Points award newsletter, as well as Thrifty Travelers award space newsletter or alert program. I've seen probably a dozen, maybe even 2 dozen alerts in the last, I'll say, 2 weeks. And in every single one of them, you're seeing a lot of space in first quarter 26. You're actually seeing a lot of space over the summer, but there's 1 month that there's just virtually nothing, and that's September. And it's interesting because when you look at, it was either Dotsline's Destinations or the Air Show that was talking about how schedules in September are sort of in flux, right? Airlines have started to trim their summer schedules. I think Delta has come out and said summer ends 15 August or so. And so you're starting to see a lot of that trimming. And I think they've trimmed. I think they're putting out that award space because they want to fly full if they can. There's difficulty there, it seems like. We're seeing less travel from Europe in March. I think that's a trend that is probably going to continue. But to that point, I think if Europe is 10% down, I think US to Europe is 5% up. So, I mean, I think there's there's a negative delta, but I don't think it's as great as I think what some folks are trying to kind of portray. But I feel like airlines are holding back on September. And I don't know if it's they're holding back in hopes that you're going to see an uptick in business travel, you're going to see an uptick in travel in September, or if they're just waiting to cut that space too, you know, to cut those flights.
It feels like a lot of the uncertainty is being basically represented by that lack of space you're seeing in September. I feel like that's normally their transition period anyway, right? And so they could be doing a lot of cutting back capacity, even more than they were planning. I guess maybe the winter schedule is more baked in. Like they know what they're going to do because they're already lean in a lot of their routes, especially to, you know, some of the locations that are not seasonally advantaged, like Europe and those places where they know they were already going to cut back to kind of like the minimum schedule, given the seasonality of those destinations. But that uncertainty, I think, is really being manifested in September, because I'm wondering if the airlines want to give themselves plenty of space to be able to cut, you know, what they need to, whether it be, you know, capacity, routes, aircraft, whatever they want to do. So there's, I bet September has the highest level of uncertainty of what they're going to do as compared to some of these other parts where they're like, you know what, even if the economy's soft, people are going to travel in summer. Even if the economy is doing gangbusters, winter in Europe is going to be light. So they know what they're doing in these two extreme situations. And it's just that kind of where we transition between them, where they're like, well, I don't know what we're going to do. Do we park the planes early? Do we park them later? Do we try some things that time? You know, I feel like maybe that's some of it. And that's just, again, me being not an industry insider, just watching from the sidelines.
Those are really great points. And the other thing that I don't think we've seen this year, I think we've seen a little bit more Australia announcements for the wintertime.
Definitely. Yeah. New routes too, right? Like, didn't they add Adelaide or something?
Yeah. Is it Adelaide that they added?
I feel like they added Adelaide from United, right? I think that's the new route.
I think there is a new Australian city that was added. If it's Adelaide, I'll take your word for it. For some reason, I thought it was North. Or maybe it was just Dots Line's destinations. We're talking about like a Darwin flight, maybe just being funny.
I don't think there's a Darwin flight from the US, okay? So
I don't think so either. Well, doesn't Qatar do like a Darwin flight? And then they do like the catch up down to Melbourne?
I think they do some weird things because they're limited on their total number of planes that can fly to Australia, right? And so the way they're doing it is they're putting on extra, they're doing this kind of, not Fifth Freedom, right? But they're doing these tag flights domestically, just so that they can get extra access to Melbourne and Sydney.
Yeah, exactly. So Darwin does get some service.
They may.
But even that, it seems like some of the airlines are only announcing like the really peak time, like what is that, December, January period.
Right, the summer in the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah, but like they're not going the full season. They're only going like a 1 or 2 month period, just around the holidays and everything. And that sort of shows how conservative these airlines are right now. Because they just, you know, nobody knows.
I think part of that is just, and then I think Dots Lines and Destinations and some other airline observers have kind of pointed this out, you know, that's also just United, I think, primarily driving a lot of this. Because I think United is far more adventurous in their route planning and their network planning than Delta and American. You know, Delta and American are just so much more conservative about where they put their planes. And United's just like, nope, we're just going to like try Mongolia. We're going to try Sicily. We're going to try Adelaide, you know, and they're just going to go nuts on anything. And many cases, to their credit, I mean, I think they're definitely the gamblers, you know, when it comes to their network planning. And many times, you know, their boldness and aggressiveness in that has kind of paid off because they've had that first mover advantage, right?
Yeah. I mean, definitely pull out the dartboard. But, you know, you mentioned Sicily. Delta flies JFK to Catania nonstop. And obviously, that's the competitor to the flight you're referencing, which is Newark to, I just forgot the other major city in Sicily.
Is it Palermo?
Palermo, that's it. Palermo. Wasn't that where they went on season 2 in The White Lotus when they took the yacht?
Probably.
Palermo.
I didn't pay enough attention. Yes, I watched that whole episode or season, but I forgot where in Sicily they were. I figured it'd be easy enough. Just look up Four Seasons in Sicily and you'll figure it out.
Well, No. They took the yacht from the Four Seasons, which was, oh gosh, now I'm forgetting. I thought they took it to
Naples or the mainland or something, or
I thought they went vice versa. I thought they went from like the mainland to Palermo.
I felt like they went to a bigger city. Yeah, they went to a bigger city somewhere. Anyway.
Yeah.
Now that is a real tangent if we're talking about specific episodes of The White Lotus. from a year ago.
Yeah, I think we might just have to cut our losses here.
The tangents are getting even more tangential, my friends.
There really is no way home with all these tangents.
There's no way home with these tangents. Getting us back kind of to our original topic, you know, I'll say the other thing I think that kind of influences us a little bit, because again, we're all about the airline experience and kind of the flight experience, is it's a lot easier to plan for things, you know, when you're going out, because honestly, there's more lounge time. You know, it's like easier to make those decisions because, you know, we kind of looking forward to, you know, some of these layovers and things on the way out. And then on the way back, you know, it's like, unfortunately, lounge on arrival is kind of a lost thing, right? There's very few locations in the world that have arrivals lounge, either access or actual dedicated arrivals lounges. It's like Heathrow, maybe like a couple places in the Middle East, Hong Kong. It's so...
Zurich.
Okay. Yeah, but it's such a minimal number of places where you have that pre-security arrivals lounge experience that... You know, I think that also drives some of it, where it's a lot easier, I think, sometimes to make these decisions on your way out, because you're like, oh, I'm excited to spend a couple hours at this lounge. I'm kind of excited to spend a couple hours at this lounge. But then on the way back, it's only that one connection point where you're going to have some meaningful connection time and some lounging, where you don't have that same dynamic on the way out.
Yeah, it's all about the experience. And some of those experiences you get on the way out just are not replicated on the way home. And even if you do have an arrival lounge, they're not amazing. I mean,
true.
Unless you're going to like the Air France La Première arrival lounge, I feel like you're just grabbing something off a buffet, you're getting a coffee, you're getting a shower, and then you're just, you know, on your way, because you want to get to your destination anyway.
True. But Heathrow is one of my favorite, I think, from an arrivals lounge perspective, whether it's Virgin or British Airways, you know, they both have, last time I checked, you know, an arrivals experience. And you're right. It's nice to get a little shower. It's nice not to, you know, have a little bit extra time to get your hotel if you hadn't booked one, you know, in advance for the night before. And I'm a big fan of having a full English breakfast, right, in England. Black pudding and all. And that is something they do serve in both of those lounges, and not on the buffet. You know, you can get an a la carte full English at both of those places.
Oh, very cool. I didn't realize that.
Yep.
So then it seems like LHR, London Heathrow, has a much better experience. I mean, in Zurich, the thing I enjoyed most was the Mövenpick ice cream.
Well, ice cream and aviation, this is a combination that cannot be understated.
Yes, yes. And a full English breakfast.
Yes, that too.
Well, shall we close it out?
I think so. I think I'm all out of tangents. I'm sure the listeners are going to be happy about that.
Well, that's the show. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you enjoyed listening.
If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Milenomics Patreon member and get access to even more in-depth miles, points, and travel content.
Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story.